Alrighty, welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
This is Johan.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
Chris, you can f*** it in its hairy werewolf ass.
Bring Johan, it! Look at that. Look at that right there on the sound wave. You baffle me. Okay, obviously you at home cannot see the sound wave. The way the setup here works is we have four mics in the St. Louis location that are split across the two stereo pans. So left side, right side. And I alternate the mics. So if, let's say, somebody coughs, I can at least reduce how much the other mics picked it up and such. Johan has this, like, omnipresent voice. He has, like, the voice of God. Because when he speaks, it is no quieter or louder on any mic. It picks up perfectly at the same volume on every mic in the room, including the one he's in front of, picks it up at no greater volume than the one facing away from him on the opposite side of the table.
You should hear me talk in a building with really good acoustics, like a church. It's something to hear.
That is freaky.
Yeah, see what I'm talking about? It is weird. I realize you guys at home have no way of appreciating this because we reduced this.
That is really unbelievable.
Down to mono, but it is weird. Okay, anyway, this is a bonus episode mostly. We have a real topic here we're going to talk about. We're going to use this topic as the backdrop for a little game we're going to play, and that's what's going to make it a bonus episode. Now, usual disclaimer for anyone who's not a regular Fear the Boot listener, our topics are usually at least a little more on subject than this. So if you're
generally about D&D.
So if you're looking for what this show is about,
discussions,
check out a different episode first. But nonetheless, we will push ahead with this for our regulars. This is kind of a fun little holiday thing. So the topic we're going to talk about to frame this little game is one that was suggested by Concise Locket, same guy we drew from an episode or two ago. He described this as learning to embrace player input. And he said that GMs have set ideas about the game rules they run their players through, even if setting pieces or NPCs haven't been committed to the game. However, players can be just as creative as GMs, and it's their game too, and their time. They should obviously be allowed to have creative input. So what do you, as a GM or co-player, do if a player has a strong passion for a character concept that you don't feel is quite right, and there's no middle ground? Can an Ewok fit into an all-Jedi party? Or how about a sentient motorcycle and a group of superheroes? Okay, obviously a little bit of extreme examples, but I get what he's getting at.
Did you say a sentient motorcycle?
He did say a sentient motorcycle.
That is exactly what he said.
Because that's a great anime.
Well, I'd actually take umbrage with the word sentient. I think the word, everyone uses sentient when what they're actually looking for is sapient. But that's another rant for another time.
No, rant away. I've heard you run up to the very edge of this ramp.
Right.
And then back down like 10 times.
So when people talk about conscious, intelligent life, the default word used in so much science fiction is sentient. But all sentient means is capable of sensory processing. A cockroach is sentient.
A video camera is sentient.
A video camera, so to speak, is sentient.
All right, I'm following you so far.
What sapient means is sapient comes from a Greek word meaning wise or possessing of wisdom. That's what we are called. That's what Homo sapiens means. It means... Mm. So sapiens part means the wise. It means man the wise.
It's a difference.
Which is why we are poorly named.
I was going to say somebody had a high opinion of us. It wasn't me.
It's the difference between beavers building a dam and then us building the Sistine Chapel.
Correct. That is sapiens, not sentience, because both are sentient. Yeah, and I did just check. I am correct on my understanding of sentient. It just means capable processing senses. All right. Anyway, my point here being, though, is not to nitpick Concise Locket's wording apart, because I get what he's getting at. But here's the game we're going to play. Over the past several episodes, we've been a wee bit
mean. I really hope
Chris.
You got that rant out of your system.
I did.
Thank you.
Capital ships will come later. All right.
As long as nobody breaches Singaria around Pat.
So as long as we are doing this episode and talking about that topic, we're going to play a little game. Here's how the game's going to work. Chris gets to basically run the episode any way he wants. He may talk to us about us, ask us questions, whatever he wants
to
do.
I like how we have to lay down rules for Chris to interact with us. Yeah, really. He's a normal human being.
I mean, he does that anyway.
We have a host, but we're gonna tell you exactly how we want him to speak.
Now, this being nice to Chris thing hasn't started yet.
No,
right?
No, we haven't lost the game yet. Right.
Not only has it not started yet, it will never start. So let's just get that, straight right now.
Ever. All right, number two. No one may refuse to talk when directly asked by any host, including Chris or a local host.
Number three, no one may lie or skirt the truth so far that it's effectively a lie. Number four, you may not deflect a question with another question unless you're just looking for clarification so you can answer the question.
Can we, this might be handled here, but can we choose to refuse to answer?
No, you must answer. That was rule number two. No one may refuse to talk when directly asked a question. You have to answer. Number five, Chris may bait us, but he may not entrap us. Okay, so every question Chris asks or thing he says, there must be a possible way out.
Pat, I'm going to bait you.
If you say...
You're a master at it.
I am a master at that.
All right, if you say anything mean to or about Chris or break any of the above rules, you lose, okay?
Do we have a judge or arbiter?
Yes, that will be Johan.
Okay.
Johan.
Uncle Johan.
He will not be the
voice of God.
He will not be the judge of the letter of the law because I wrote the rule, so I'll do that. But he will be the judge. He will be the judge of the spirit of the law.
You're sort of an impotent judge.
Yeah.
So
not only you're like Congress, and Dan can go and just declare war, and he doesn't give a shit about asking you.
Not only do we have to have rules governing how we interact with Chris, but there's also like this multi-tiered legislation system in place.
Chris, you
want to
get this started soon? Because here's how the final thing works: the minute any one of us scores a point, we're still on the episode. But we have lost the game, okay? So all we get to do at that point is try to agitate other people.
Okay.
All right, so anyone who says something mean about you, basically, they're screwed, they lose. If at the end of the episode, Chris, you have gotten everyone out of the game, you win. If so much as one host is still left in, that person wins. And what I will do to make this interesting, to make something on the table here.
Does Johan count as a host?
No.
Johan never counts as a host.
Johan is a judge. What I
Hell,
will do
I
is,
barely count as a host.
Barely, barely counts as a human.
I will give either an Amazon or Best Buy gift card to anyone that wins this game.
Really?
Okay.
Well, is there actual credit and money
on
this?
Oh, yes, real deal. Because okay. I want to make some stakes here, okay? So, Chris, if you're ready, it's your episode, so go ahead.
What if more than one person wins?
Then I'll get multiples.
Okay.
So, alrighty. So, Chris, you have until the 1 hour mark on this recording, so you got about 50 minutes to get all of us out.
Okay.
Get the four of us out. So
I
take it away.
I just don't understand this game.
That's okay, Pat. I'm not entirely clear on it as well, but we'll see how this goes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Chris.
My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
This is the judge.
Here comes the judge.
And my name is Pat.
And Pat, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing pretty well, actually. I'm actually here by myself. Julie and the kids headed up north. And
how's
I've got,
Julie doing? How are the family? Did you have a nice holiday?
Okay, I was in the middle of a sentence, so does that count then, Johan?
No, he didn't say anything.
Wait. Anything about interruptions
judge?
On there, was there?
No,
this
there was
is
not.
A judgment. Yep. All right.
Oh, okay, so interruptions are not part of the deal.
No, he has to say something mean to you.
Because that's one of Chris's complaints, is interruptions.
No, it's not in the rules.
Oh, okay.
All right. It's not in the rules. Okay.
Now we know why Dan wrote the
Pat,
letter.
Pat, will you please, in the spirit of the rules, will you please repeat the question?
I was just asking, how are Julie and the kids, and did you have a nice holiday?
They are doing very well, thank you very much. And yeah, I did actually have a nice holiday. My dad came down for the first time to celebrate Christmas with us. He normally spends Christmas up north and everything, which is, you know, completely normal and understandable, but he was able to come down. So that was actually very nice. And one of my sisters came down from Madison. So it was a good Christmas all around.
Madison, Wisconsin?
Madison, Wisconsin. So you want me to ask a few questions then of everybody?
You can ask questions. We have a topic to talk about of players having impact on the game.
Well, you know, let's talk about that topic.
That's brilliant moderation, Chris. Brilliant.
Thank you. Not having concise Lockett's original email in
count?
Front of you there.
Lying is forbidden in the rules. Lying's forbidden in the rules, but he's the judge. Okay. So go on, Chris.
Not having his initial post there, but I believe Dan, you already kind of covered it. You know, one of the points I had tried to make in that initial episode was that I didn't necessarily, and we talked about this a little bit with in the Jim Pinto episode as well, is that I didn't necessarily like that approach very much when it dealt with NPCs. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem when it comes to objects or maybe certain circumstances within the game. But when it came to NPCs, and I actually even got some backup on the forums on this, which kind of made me feel a little vindicated, because I think the common assessment amongst everybody was Chris is wrong, and then you all just kind of moved on from that point. Was that when it came to NPCs, there was a general, my opinion was, there was a general feeling of checkout in regards to players about individuals when the players are assigning things about the NPC's appearance or maybe certain mannerisms that he might have. There's a lessening of the importance of this NPC when it comes to those descriptors. If the GM is not investing enough time to tell you what this individual looks like, then as a player, you have this instinctual knowledge that this person may not necessarily be as important as you may have first thought. It lacks some investment then at that point from the players.
Just to clarify and make sure I understand what you're saying, Chris, are you saying that as a DM, when you're presenting NPCs to the players, your detail or lack thereof is giving some sort of unintended insight to the players as to the relative importance of the NPC?
No, I usually try and treat all of my NPCs equally in that certain sense, where I'll usually try and provide a physical description, even if it's an unimportant NPC, because for me, I want to, you know, my goal is to try and create a sense of immersion in what's going on in the game. And
now, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but you wish to create a sense of immersion, you wish to show the importance of it, but didn't you also say in one of the episodes that you had a puzzle where they're putting together a statue, pieces of a statue, and the puzzle you used was of puppies?
Kittens.
Kittens was what I referenced, and then I later referenced that. I wasn't 100% sure that that was actually what the puzzle, the final picture of the puzzle was. But the important point that I attempted to make in there was that what the puzzle was didn't matter, because...
Can't you, by the same argument, say that it doesn't matter? I mean, the GM is just asking the player for a name or a quick description, not actual plot relevant stuff, but just asking.
Understand what he's getting at, though. By doing that, the way he's been running his game, by doing that, that is making that character unique. That NPC is then being treated differently than all the other NPCs, you know, and thus singled out.
Greg Christopher was the one who explained it to me, which led up to my snide comment two episodes back or whatever. But he was the one, because he was mentioning something about this on Google+. He was saying, you know, Chris said this, and I totally agree with him, and the guys jumped all over him, I don't understand why, which was what a bunch of people in the forums had said as well. And I'd read all those explanations, and it wasn't clicking with me. I wasn't getting it. And so I said, okay, Greg, I know you're a reasonable guy. I'm talking one-on-one here. It's not this, you know...
Are you trying to insinuate that Chris is not?
No, only that his explanations just weren't getting through to me.
Dan was saying it was a deficiency on his end. Never saying that it's a deficiency on Chris's end.
But
a deficiency on my end in the episode when he talked about the fact that Greg Christopher needed to speak for me.
Perhaps that too was a deficiency on Dan's end, because...
The fact that I said something mean in the past is historically correct. So the point here being, though, that I said to Greg, explain this to me, and Chris was on this thread too. I said, explain this to me. What's the issue here? And we went kind of back and forth. He's like, well, it takes something away from the immersion. I'm like, well, okay, well, wait a minute. You know, I'm not sure I buy that for this and this reason. It would mean they're an insignificant NPC. Because if the party's naming them, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, I regularly draw NPCs from the histories of my player characters. I've had them on the spot name and describe characters in the past who have gone on to be very deep characters. I said, well, it might be laziness on the part of the GM. I'm like, but it's just a name. I still am developing all the plot and all the detail. I'm not turning the game over.
I name all the characters that I have in Final Fantasy VII, and that doesn't make them any less important.
Exactly.
NPCs.
It's just my attempt to get somebody off the wall and involved in the game. You know, someone who was previously on the outside, not bought in, to at least contribute something to get off the rails.
It's kind of like when we're podcasting and we directly ask Pat a question.
But here's how he finally explained it to me in a way that made sense to me. He basically said, as best as I understand it, and I'm not going to try to totally speak on his behalf here, but the issue is not that per se it's problematic, but that in his history of gaming, when GMs have done things like that, it's been because the GM was being lazy. This character didn't matter, so you might as well pick him out. And so because of his formative gaming experiences, it sent the wrong message. And so when the game master did that, on some subconscious level, even if in truth this was the most important character in the game, he was going to discount that character, check out of the game, get pulled out of the moment because of his formative experiences. Whereas in our group, I mean, like, you know, Chad, yours and mine's gone back decades. Mm-hmm. This is normal. I mean, this is how we always did things.
When Chad introduces NPC, he may not even know the relevance of it yet.
Yeah. And see, and that's where I think one of the differences comes up is that in your and Chad's experience, that's normal. In my experience, that's not normal. Having the players contribute that type of information creates a situation where, just as you described, it's not necessarily, I don't look at it as laziness, but I just look at it as, you know, I always use the term breaking that fourth wall just because of a theatrical background, but it's knowledge that's outside of what's actually going on in the scene.
Chris, would you look at it any differently if you'd asked the player the week beforehand for name and background, or if, say, it was just an NPC that you're pulling from a character's background? In both cases, they're presenting the name and information about the character.
Or it could be the setting you're running. Say you're running Dresden Files and everybody around the table has read the Dresden books. You didn't make up that character. Somebody else did.
If I would have asked for information, say a week beforehand or whatever, I probably would have asked for bits and pieces maybe about the individual, especially if it's something that comes from the character's background. If it's from the character's background, that's the domain of that player, and I'm going to let them give me what they've got from that background. If I have room for interpretation within there, then I'm going to go do that. That's kind of their realm. They created that. They checked it out with me and make sure, yeah, does this mesh with everything that's going on in your world? Yes. I do draw a distinction between when it comes to NPCs and, say, inanimate objects, because when we're talking about bardic knowledge back a few episodes ago, I have absolutely no problem with somebody rolls bardic knowledge, say, on this particular item or the legend of this particular area or region, and the GM says, tell me what you know about it. Make it up. Let's hear it. And if the player wants to go and get into a big flowery exposition as to what exactly is the whole story behind all this, I'm all for that, because...
But wouldn't that make what the player is talking about, by using the logic from the NPC here, unimportant and immersion breaking?
No,
it's because the same thing.
No, actually it's not the same thing, because I could tell you the story of how my parents met, and it might be true, but it's not necessarily going to be the complete factual things of what happened. So if a character, through their character, tells me the story of what they know about this, that's open to interpretation. If an NPC comes out and I say, he has a mustache and it's black, that's an established fact. And there's a distinct
but
difference.
But does it matter to the plot? I mean, what we're saying here is not massive plot important things.
What it matters to me is a level of immersion in the game.
Wouldn't something like a bardic knowledge roll, where you're getting into a long exposition about the history and the lore?
There was a war between the dwarves and the dwarves.
Yeah. Isn't that
the dwarves were all wiped out here?
Isn't that more?
But I've got dwarves in my game. He just said all the dwarves are wiped out.
Isn't that more immersive? Isn't that more immersive breaking than his name's Fred and he has a black mustache?
What if I was playing a bard in your campaign, Chris, and I rolled my bardic knowledge on that innkeeper? Could I then describe him myself, and would that not be immersion breaking?
He's a dwarf.
Why would you? So you're going to roll bardic knowledge to try and describe what the innkeeper looks like?
We go into
sure. Isn't that a bit? You know,
maybe the innkeeper. Maybe I get a roll and I find out that this barkeeper is not what he appears to be.
He rolls up before he walks into the bar.
You're walking down the road and you're coming across the Color Animal Inn at this famous crossroads. You've never been there before. Hey, can I roll my bardic knowledge? This place is a famous inn. I might have played here before. Who's the barkeep? Roll some dice. You made it. Now describe to me. Who is the barkeep? Oh no, my immersion, it's broken in half. You know, no, nobody's going to say that. People are going to say that was pretty cool. That's pretty interesting.
And the way I would play that at my table was I'd totally let him do it and describe it in the way in which you just laid out. And then if there was some element of what he said that I realized on the spot, this isn't going to work for this particular reason, whatever that element might be, I would probably change that one thing, because bardic knowledge is not necessarily always hard facts. That's a skill that's open to interpretation. And the player is interpreting it one way, I'm going to interpret the other way. Now, the other point,
thought there were goblins, and really this game doesn't have goblins. It has goblins.
Chad, you had asked me a question. Wayne interrupted like he normally does. And so I did not get to hear your question, and I want to answer it so I can still play the game.
I was never actually asking you a question. I was just sort of rhetorically proving your point wrong.
Judge, okay. Ruling?
Johan?
Am I ruling on whether Chad was being mean to Chris right there?
Yes.
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Totally worth it. Totally worth it.
All right, Chad, you are now out of the game. It also means your leash is off. So.
Chris, you're a f***ing idiot. You are inconsistent and wrong about this. Also, your opinions of Shadowrun, you say it's a good game, you're wrong about that too. It's a horrible game.
Chris, I like Shadowrun, and that's no lie there. I enjoy Shadowrun.
They have no opinion on Shadowrun. Game in the pinnacle of RPGs.
It's a very enjoyable game.
Oh, shit, the judge has spoken.
So, Chris, I look at what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from, but and I do see that it's all about consistency. Your experience in this is that you've never done it this way, so to all of a sudden start doing it would be horribly inconsistent, which I agree with. That's not a good thing to
do.
Well,
it would be change, and change is scary to old people.
Change is scary to many
people.
So
many people just wanted to agree with me right now, and they couldn't. That was the best feeling ever.
But I guess what I wanted to go on with, sort of to have a point here, is that would you ever consider maybe trying to do this? And because I look at this as a golden opportunity of, you know what? I don't do this, and if I were to do this, my players would immediately write this guy off as just bumble heck whatever and just not even pay attention to him. I would jump on that like a tiger and say, oh yeah, okay, you go ahead and describe this seemingly non-interesting, innocuous NPC. They do it, they write him off, and all of a sudden, boom, you do an end around on him, and he or she is an important character.
Especially with a name like Bumbleheck.
Yeah, well, it's Bumbleheck is the censored bumble, but, you know, what are you going to do? I'm trying to keep this a family show.
Well, you see, and that ship has sailed a long time ago.
Boy, has it.
Here's the other problem I think generally exists in regards to when we have discussions about styles and approaches and things like that, where there is disagreement, is that, to your question, would I ever look at that as an opportunity to attempt that approach? Absolutely. Why not? What the hell? I mean, there is nothing that I do that I'm so, in my gaming approach, that I'm so married to, that it is an infallible rule and I always have to do it that way. I don't roll that way. So yeah, the answer to the question, absolutely I would do that, and I wouldn't have any necessarily problems doing so, and I pay attention to how it made me feel, how was my player's reaction to it, did it really change much, you know, that kind of thing. But the problem is, this is what happens when you deal with any kind of medium, is that it kind of distorts what the reality of the situation is. You guys come at it with an approach that, here is one thing we do, and Chad does actually a very good job of this when he talks, because he's a very good speaker in this sense. Where,
don't try and kiss my ass.
No, believe me, trust me, dude.
Thank you, though. Yeah, no, it's cool.
But Chad has a way of speaking that makes it seem like this is the correct way, and when you do it in this way, things are going to be wonderful. Your shit will stop to stink, and then and rainbows will come pouring out of your ears, and your earwax will become
shooting
edible
out
at that
your
point.
Ass.
And
rainbows,
and any
shoot
other
out your ass.
Different approach that's presented generally gets shot down. You know, like in the last episode, for example. Really, on the whole, there's really nothing wrong with modules. But Chad, I give you credit for doing a very eloquent job, or determined job, I guess would be the better way to say it, of trying to make sure that the end point being made was that modules suck. And then if you use them, you're stupid.
We did all disagree with him, though.
Felt like good that did. Shake your fist in impudent rage. Modules still suck.
You know what? And the funny thing was, Chad, when I was coming up with questions for this, one of the questions I had for you, honest to God, yes, this is one of the questions I have written here. I said, Chad, did you ever run a published module or adventure as written? And how long did it take for you to finally go off script?
Dan might correct me because his memory is far better than mine. I am going to say
No, I've never run.
I cannot think of no. Module, no. I've run a few.
Ever played one?
Yes. I know he has because I've run a few.
I've played some from other people too. I will say that the reason I have never played a module or ran a module as a GM is because I didn't come into GMing until very late. One of the points that Johan actually made very well on this episode that we had recorded about modules is that he talks about how it's a gateway for GMs. It's a good place for GMs to start. It guides them and kind of shows how it's done. And you're absolutely right.
You were ass deep in the hobby long before you GM.
Yes. Right. Yes.
I GM'd for the first time when I was 8.
Yeah. So. The transition, you know, what we talk about, there's those horrible teenage games, which are all about combat and loot. And then there's like the dungeon crawler. And then you play for a while and then you get into story and you get into improv and narrative and stuff. I never GM'd. And my first game that I GM'd was we were well past all of that. So I kind of skipped all of that over when I started GM. So no, I never actually ran a module before.
Pat?
Yes?
What is your biggest problem with the female gender?
That they're not all naked at all times.
Kind of like Ferengi women.
That's a fairly good answer, actually. That wasn't quite what I expected, but I like
it. Also, you know, some of them are going around owning property,
boating.
You know, my problem...
I did work with a guy who often made the comment. He goes, the first mistake we ever made was letting them vote.
I think he was really serious. Yeah, and they tend to be older gentlemen. It's the older generation. No, yeah, I've heard that
that's
before.
The thing. This guy was like 20 years younger than me.
Oh, really?
Wow. Oh, yeah.
No, that's the older generation,
that's,
Chris.
That's enlightenment. That's our older generation. You know, actually, Pat, I disagree with you. Sexism and all reality and being cold and all that aside.
It wouldn't be interesting.
It wouldn't be interesting. The naked female form would be the de facto, I mean, they would have to put clothes on to be tantalizing.
Can you imagine being desensitized to boobies?
Yeah.
No. Well, and here's the, here's the thing. You say that, and I know what you're saying.
Right.
But that being the case, you go to Europe where nudity is not the taboo thing that it is here in the United States.
Right.
And you see it. I mean, women will go around, like they'll be topless in the parks or whatever like that. Mm-hmm. It's because it is not unacceptable.
Right.
And so they do that. And I don't think that those people are any less desensitized to to the female form.
But that's still not an everyday thing.
Yeah.
Actually, in some places it is.
He's right.
But it's not. Go to a nudist colony and ask them, does just the sight of the body still turn them on? I don't know the answer. I've never been to a nudist colony, but I would guess that they're probably desensitized.
Knowing what most people at nudist colonies look like.
This is true. I will say is this. I am not desensitized to the naked female form. For any of you that have been into my office, you should know the weight that statement carries.
That's very true. I can vouch for that. That's very true. Dan, I have a question for you then as well.
Okay.
Now, do you think that you would ever be able to turn over moderating host duties to another host consistently for more than one episode?
Ooh, that's a good question.
And who would it be? Who's your favorite?
No, it wouldn't be a question of favorite, because it's for moderating host, it takes a really specific skill set. Everyone brings things to the show that another person does not bring, okay? In this regard, I think my short answer would be no. It's not because no one here brings anything useful. It's because, quite the reverse. You guys all bring great stuff, but I don't know that anyone could quite pin down the sense of putting aside opinion and moderating and really serving the show over, I don't know, I don't say over self, but...
Dan, would you let Chris moderate the show?
If he were in the room, I'll even give you that caveat. Yeah. You don't have the whole in another state thing to protect you there.
And if no, then why?
Would I let Chris... Are we talking moderate consistently or just like moderate like a show?
Yeah,
no, consistently. No, it goes off my original question. It'd be because you let Pat moderate an occasional show here and there, but I'm talking consistently for like a stretch of like 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah, Chris, is that the real question here? Is you want to moderate the show?
Oh, no. I agree with Wayne. I think being the solo remote host, I think, would be a detriment if I was the moderator.
Okay, I'm going to join Chad. No, absolutely not.
Welcome. It's a wonderful place to be.
for the simple reason that one of the biggest things in moderation is you have to have a huge amount of empathy, and I don't.
Really?
I'm already there. I just wanted to put the official stamp on it.
Because you have to really be able to see other viewpoints. If you can't see the value even in viewpoints you disagree with and really understand them, it's hard to moderate. And while I'm not so arrogant as to think I'm unique in that skill set, I do think that it's something, at least among this group of people, I express more easily than anyone else does. But once again, I don't say with any arrogance, because there are things you guys do 100 times better than I do.
I look good.
Well, I only lack empathy with people who are wrong. So,
in fact, I'm still taking shit for letting Pat moderate for an episode.
Really? From who?
People on the internet.
Give me names. Give me addresses.
Well, those people are wrong, because I actually think
it's been twice. I've done it twice now.
I thought you did a fine job.
I was going to say, generally speaking, I was surprised by the reaction to it.
Who's moderated the show? You, obviously, Dan. I have.
I thought Wayne. Did Wayne? Did you?
No.
I've never moderated
an episode. Maybe the one at Gen Con a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I say the vast majority of them have been moderated by me.
I've never tried my hand at moderating.
You want to? I'll sell you a show cheap.
I don't know.
Does it involve werewolves?
To finish answering the question, I have often thought about that, because I am of the firm belief that any creative project that is only as big as one person is a bad project. And the line I've always been trying to draw internally is the fact that I tend to moderate, is that a sign that Fear the Boot is no bigger than I am, which means it has problems in my mind? Or is that just a sign that just as Chad does the boisterous hippie guy,
what?
That maybe this is just something I do better than other people, but that doesn't mean...
I am the voice of reason. Shadowrun sucked, people.
But that doesn't mean, per se, that the show is only as big as I am. And that's something I've tried to sort out. I don't know. I've got to say that at some point I would like to find somebody else who's capable of moderating for that reason alone.
You want to find somebody who's capable of editing.
Well, I would probably pay somebody at the damn show. But I want to find somebody who's capable of moderating, just, I guess, to internally know in my own heart of hearts that Fear the Boot is bigger than me.
Mm-hmm.
Community is. I have no doubt about the community being bigger than I am. But is the show bigger than me? That's my question. So, okay, I'm under the bus with Chad. So we got two players left. We got Wayne and Pat.
Why are you so against actual plays?
I've always been against them for the very reason... Well, okay, let me start over. Collect my thoughts here, because I do have a rant on this. I don't like the idea of an actual play.
Can you start it with da 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 and then go to your rant?
I guess.
It just works so much better for me. You can even take the top hat off of Fear of God if you need to.
No, that's okay. I'm good.
Over here and you can use it.
That would be fine. Sure. Okay. I don't like...
See?
I know.
See, you know, he's all like, my kinks are fine. All women should be naked. But when it comes to your kinks...
I know.
Nothing. Nothing.
Go on.
I am completely supportive of Dan's kinks.
Well,
then...
Oh, okay.
See, now he's...
Well, I don't know exactly where I'm going to start. I was going to throw it in when I got rolling, I guess. But give me the top hat. And give me the cane.
There's the cane. There's a hat. Okay.
Now do it slow.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
That was kind of hot.
There you go. Thank you. Okay, so... What the hell were we talking about?
Actual plays.
And why you love them.
I don't personally want to participate in an actual play, because I feel that I would be limited in what I would normally feel comfortable doing in a role-playing session. What I mean by that is, when we are together as a group in role-playing, it's not just 100% role-play all the time. There's a lot of downtime. There's a lot of joking. There's a lot of joviality that goes on. A lot of side conversations, et cetera, et cetera. Jocularities. And in and among those, you're going to have things that are said that you would not want to have heard by the world, let's say.
It's about Chris?
Well, no, not about Chris. Oh. About, you know, about this side of it, just about anyone in general. We have said,
out of what?
Everybody has, you know, their certain amount of off-color humor or jokes or whatever that they would say. And because of that, I would always be aware of the fact that I'm being recorded. So I'm not being myself around the role-playing table. I'm not being myself in this session. I'm really putting on an act for the microphone, as opposed to I'm just sitting back and enjoying the role-playing session. Because that's one of the things I said is these people that put shit on Facebook about their jobs, about their boss, about their significant others or whatever, and then they get fired, divorced, whatever, and then they're surprised by it. It blows my mind. This, you know, the culture that we live in now is so acceptive of the social media, but they're just now sort of starting to see there is some detriment to it, and you have to be careful with it. I equate that a lot in the same way as that. I don't want to be recorded in that sense, because there might be something that I would say amongst a small group of friends that is obviously, you guys know me and you know I'm kidding, I'm joking. That's my particular brand of humor at that point. But not everybody knows me and not everybody knows that, and they could be offended by it. So that, in a nutshell, is why I don't want to do an actual play.
That's partially why I wouldn't want to do a campaign of it, because it would take away from the regular campaign. If the only gaming you're getting is a game that you're recording and doing actual play, yeah, I think I would be reserved as well, and it would take something away from it. But doing a one-shot as an actual play, I have no problem with that. Doing a campaign where you know from the beginning it's actual play, if you behave differently on a recording than you do normally, something like that as well. Like, so I wouldn't want my only gaming to be actual play.
The only actual plays out there with me on them worked out just great, because I had the permission of a black man to say whatever. Yeah.
I was going to say, I'll even give you, I've even got another aspect to this, and this is more of a self-deprecating reason that I wouldn't want to do one. I don't want the shine to be off the rose, or the magic to be gone, in the fact that I don't want people to actually hear how bad at role-playing I am by listening to me stutter and stumble through this shit that's not edited by Dan. And, you know, it's like, oh my God, people would be like, why would they ever play with Pat? He sucks as a role player. I can just imagine that.
20 IQ points to everybody on the mics. By
that is the honest to God truth. I mean,
even Chris,
everybody is completely fair.
When I went to Fear the COD, I was afraid people are going to come in thinking with all these expectations about us as gamers.
Yeah.
And then we're sitting at tables to other people's games. I was like,
I have described this show as a monument to our failures.
Yes, it is.
If nobody's gotten that point, they haven't gotten through the boot. That's all I can say. So,
Wayne?
Yes?
Why do you hate old people so much? Yeah.
Actually, with your delayed response, you may have already answered this question. My question to you is going to be, how long before you tune out when I start talking?
Chris, I honestly never tune out when you talk.
Whoa.
I believe ruling? We established that lies are acceptable.
Do we? Okay.
No, you can't absolutely lie.
That is not a lie.
Oh, you can't lie.
Actually, I've said this many times before. My favorite parts of the show have been the arguments with Chris, whether it be Chad arguing with Chris, Dan arguing with Chris, or the one or two times when I've been on the other side of a topic with him. Those, for me, are some of the most fun that ever comes out of Fear the Boot episodes.
Why is Chris lightning rod for so many arguments?
Well, actually, I have a better question, Wayne.
Because he's remote.
Because
I think it's because I'm remote, but I think it's also because I'm willing to step out there and present an alternate view. And I agree with you completely, Wayne. I think that those are the best parts of the entire show. And that, to me, shows what a dynamic and interesting hobby that we have, that Chad's approach, as drug-induced as it may be, with his dreads and his pot smoking.
With my shaved head and never touching drugs in my life, yes.
But there's absolutely nothing wrong with the way that man runs a game. Nothing at all. In fact, I have a lot of respect for his ability to do so. And at the same time, there's nothing wrong with the way either someone like Dan or I runs a game, because what ends up happening is that still Chad's table enjoys themselves, my table enjoys themselves. And even though the approaches may be definitely different, it's what comes out of there and the disagreements that can come from that make it fun.
Yeah, I can say I've been in at least a one-shot done by Dan, Chad, and Chris, and I've taken something away from every one of them to include in my own games. Chris, very first Fear the Con I went to, when you stood up on the chair and started doing the ogre voice, I learned things from that I took forward into games that I was running later. Get up, move around, be active. That was something I was able to take away from that game. Always be willing to go with whatever the players are throwing at you from Chad. That's what I've taken from him. From Dan, just the style of gaming he he runs is the kind of game that I absolutely love too. So when I run a game, I do a lot of the same kind of planning that he would do. I want the big overall plots, but I want it to be fluid like Chad, and I want to be out there and energetic like Chris. Pat, I got nothing from you.
It's because I try not to get in the GM's chair because I know my strengths.
You know, it's weird. I have played under Pat two games, two sessions, right? It was the same game, and it was a Pat's the GM thing.
Yep.
And the first session was wonderful. You set up a framework. You let the players run around in your playground that you made. You threw out just enough hooks to people get interested. You put out just enough NPC stuff not to overbear the role players. You let people role play. You let people run with it. It was really good. The second night was f-ing awful. It was just terrible. I can't even describe what was wrong with it. It just completely disintegrated.
Chris, two men standing, you got about 13 minutes to knock them out.
I know. And these are honestly, the two tougher ones to try and eliminate. I think it's the person who I expected to fall first fell. And actually, Dan, I expected you to go down, probably either second or third. So I think the part of the problem is with that is, like I even said when you proposed this, Pat doesn't talk. He has an advantage in that sense right there. And Wayne certainly takes his shots at me, but most of that is the giving of shit rather than anything, I don't know. A more of a malicious nature.
Well, I genuinely like you, Chris.
So let's ask the firebrand questions now.
Okay.
So
what,
like...
So what? I'm sorry, what?
The sort of firebrand questions.
Okay.
Wayne, what's the most outrageously ludicrous thing you've ever heard Chris say? Because you said that your favorite part of the show is when people argue and stuff, and especially argue with Chris. What is the most outrageous argument
Now,
Chris
the answer
has ever
to this
presented?
Question cannot knock him out, because that's entrapment. But
no. Hey, you wrote the rules. You said Chris may not ask an entrapment question.
He's correct to the letter of the law, judge of the spirit of the law.
Well, the judge of the spirit of the law would say that Wayne is capable of answering this question without being mean to Chris.
Okay, then very well. And the question stands.
Thank you.
I mean, I think the most shocking story that I've heard was the Master Three Balls watching the jock. That was something so far outside of my comfort zone that, yes, that was jaw-droppingly shocking for me.
Why was it outside your comfort zone? What about, specifically Chris-centric, about it was just made you cringe?
The mental image of a jock standing there in a separate room, separate from everyone else. Mm-hmm. So nobody knew what was going on in the room as he describes the situation. They said that was so far outside of my comfort. Just actually, the whole idea of playing games with a whole group of jocks is something I've never done. So that alone
was kind of squicky.
Already, I'm coming at it as something a little bit different than what I've experienced. But yeah, the idea of one man describing to another man about Master Three Balls just wanting to stare at the woman naked. That was a jock, was outside of my comfort zone.
Would you
zone.
Say that one of the things that made you really uncomfortable about it was the fact that Chris just kept going right along with it at the time?
I would say I would be uncomfortable with anyone going right along with it at the time.
Is it because it you're a ginger? It's because you're a ginger, isn't it, Wayne?
It is.
I think we've gotten to the heart of it now, gentlemen. I mean,
if Pat would have shared that story, I would have been more disturbed by it. I will give
no,
you that.
No, you wouldn't have. You would have completely understood it. You Dan, would have come. You would
I would have been
expected
equally disturbed,
it.
But
Dan,
far
do
less
you have
shocked.
A firebrand question?
Oh, I do.
Okay, let's hear your firebrand
So, question. Pat, I got one for you.
Yes.
How do you feel about the historic practice of treating Irishmen as less than human, sending them in to, like, pick up TNT and such?
I think it's completely wrong, being of Irish descent myself.
Damn.
I'm Irish and proud.
Know your audience.
Yeah. I thought I could get him to
see, and he avoided asking the ginger that question. He was playing the statistics. Uh-huh. So, but yeah, didn't quite get it.
Good try, though.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Well, let's see. This is very similar to what Chad asked, but we'll give this one a shot. Pat.
Yes.
If you could change one aspect of that, what you know of me, if you could change one aspect of what you know of me, what would that be?
That's easy. I would change the fact that you don't live in St. Louis.
Okay, apart from geography, what else?
Anger there.
I don't think that was me.
That wasn't me.
That was more of a
pet impassioned. It is impassioned. Okay.
I'm sorry. You followed that up with something, Chris, and I did not hear it.
I would say apart from geography, because that isn't necessarily, like, well, I guess in a certain sense, it's an aspect of me because it's where I live. But
that's the easy out.
Me and my personality.
Him as a person. What do you really not like about?
I'm going to answer this more in terms of about like what we've been talking about your aspects as a GM, because, and the reason I'm going to do that is because, Chris, I feel that you and I are similar in a lot of ways. We've had discussions, just the two of us, and I think we actually are, since we're more the elders of the podcast to begin with, I think we sort of do have
outside of raw sexual perversion. What is it that you guys have so in common?
Well,
raw
I sexual think that, perversion. I think that
that's a large part of it.
The family situation is
I
one
was
thing.
Wondering if yeah. I needed to call out Pat for meanness for comparing Chris to himself.
I love it. No, but anyway. I would say what I would change maybe with you is that it's become sort of clear that you have a very set way that you approach the GMing. And it's like you said, you've got your patterns and your consistency that you do. And I think maybe that you are averse to trying new things. Possibly I would implore you or even challenge you like I had done sort of earlier in talking about, you know, using that, sort of a blind side on your players. Try something that's different, that's new. That's something that you haven't done in the past, and see if you like it and see if your players like it. And then if they do, maybe, you know, you can open up sort of a different world of experiences at the gaming table and as a GM.
If you could get Chris in one way to broaden his gaming horizons, you know, what would you want him to do along the way you're saying, you know, trying new things and all? What would be the one thing to expand his threshold? How do you want him to stretch as a GM?
Now, admittedly, it is tough asking a player that question because Pat is not known for sitting behind the screen.
Which was done pure with hand gesture, was bigger boobs.
No, that wasn't it.
That was goatsy.
Goatsy.
Yeah, I know that gesture. And so, you know,
I just saw your hands saw like this.
This yeah. chest level.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. Both are funny, but I got the wrong joke.
I'm kind of going to go with the same thing, just to try something different. Do something that you have not done before. Some of the things that we've talked about on the mics that have been, let's say, passionately against, try them. You know, just try something and see if it works. And you know what? It might not work. It might miserably fail. But at least then you've tried it and you see if it does or not.
Is Beth a sensible woman?
Absolutely.
Does she have good taste?
Of course, she's married to me.
Okay. Does she know all the right things a woman needs to know?
Yes.
Okay. Why didn't you romance her within character love letters?
I am not a writer myself. Write under protest. When I do it, I do a fairly decent job, I think, but I'm a perfectionist and it's a very laborious process. So for me to do something like that,
I just worth it?
No. Of course
Here's
not.
A question. Have you stopped beating your wife?
She still wears clothes. Maybe she took those off all the time. Rip up her voter ID card, you know?
So, there
you go. You know, Pat, to just address what you said here, I know that we're getting short on time and I'm probably going to end up losing this game, but you make a good point about kind of the set in the ways approach. And there is some truth to that. And I think the truth that's in there is that, for me, it's a known approach, which then makes it safe. And it's an approach that I still get enjoyment out of. And I think part of my own personal reluctance to try something new comes from the fact that it's time-based, in that the frequency of my gaming isn't enough for me to feel that I can be very casual or very cavalier with what I do. It's almost a for sure thing that if I go with this certain approach or this certain style or whatever, that I'm going to have a good time because I've done it before and I've had good times doing it then. So I'm going to be guaranteed of getting some enjoyment out of those 5 to 6 hours.
Wayne, why do you think he feels this way?
Because, like he said, these are games he's enjoyed.
No, it's because he's old. That's what's the proper response.
I mean, it's one thing, being newer to the hobby, I don't have the gaming experience that everyone around the table here has. I haven't played through a variety of games like you guys have. I haven't figured out what it is that I like out of gaming like each one of you has. In the case of Chris, he has done that. He knows what he enjoys out of gaming. That doesn't mean that he won't like other things. That doesn't mean he couldn't come down here, play one of your Inception
hippie games. Drug-induced games.
I was going to say like Inception or Silent Memories, and it just love the hell out of it. But I kind of get what he's saying. If you only have so much time to game and you know what works, it's kind of scary to reach outside of that.
Baby steps. That's why I say just baby steps. I agree with you, Chris.
I would love to see you come down here, Chris, and every one of us, except for Pat, run a one shot for you in a completely and totally different style.
We've got a couple minutes left, so I have to create in fighting. I will give both gift cards to one of you if you can knock the other out.
Oh, jeez.
They're too nice of guys.
Wayne, has there ever been a time when you've really been angry with Pat?
In the furnace of my hate, I will break them.
I'm sorry, Chris, I couldn't hear you. Dan was talking over you.
The bus with a hate furnace and all.
Has there ever been a time, Wayne, when you've been absolutely enraged with something that Pat was doing during a recording of the podcast?
Honestly, I can't think of a time.
Perhaps, say, getting into an argument of his own with one of the other hosts or something.
I would throw it out of the table. I wouldn't hold it back at all. Yeah.
This is a question for either of you. Has Chris ever done anything on the podcast that has just absolutely enraged you, where you're just like...
The only one that's ever gotten me to the frustrated point before Chad is you.
Welcome. I had the same answer. I have been frustrated and mad at you.
We're not talking about me.
I know we're not. With Chris... I know there have been some points where, I mean, he's had his very impassioned views about something that I did not agree with, or, you know, that I did
were wrong, right?
Well, that I held a different viewpoint on, but I got agitated, I would say, but I honestly not nearly as much so as with you, Chad. You're the one that I remember.
You guys get so worked up over what I say because you know it's true.
Well, yeah, it's because you talk so much. Yeah,
pretty much.
No, that's that's true.
Actually, in all honesty, I've rarely ever been frustrated by Chad. He at least usually follows a logic. Mm-hmm. So
you could disagree with it. Yeah. With
Chad. Whereas Chris is often just totally baffling to me. No offense, Chris. I just often don't follow your logic at all. And which is why I can't respond to a lot of your points, is I simply don't understand them. And part of the and it might be added to by the fact that you're not sitting here and I can't see
there's not
facial
the
expressions and body language. Yeah. And
okay, we're running out of time. Pat, if Chris were to move down here right now, would you let him run the next game and dictate what the game is?
I have not actually had Chris run a game for me, so I would. I would, because I haven't had it.
Same question.
I had a lot of fun with the one shot that he ran.
That's not an answer.
Honestly, I would let anyone give a shot running a game except for Pat. Because I've had a bad gaming experience with Pat already.
But it's to you.
Hey, I have to direct this somewhere. Actually, there are other people I would not want to run a campaign that we have gamed with in the past. But I'm willing to give anyone a shot.
All right, Wayne and Pat, you guys both are the winners of the Chris Naughty or Nice game. You were managed to be nice to Chris for the entirety of the 50-ish minutes. So I'll get the two of you some Amazon gift cards.
$1.
Yeah, that's what I want.
I will expect an after-action report on how they were spent.
Sure.
So, Pat, you can tell me which pornography you got. So
Hot lead.
You know, I had
which installment of Action Girls you picked up for?
You know, I had actually decided what I was going to spend my Amazon gift card on.
I had decided too.
I was actually going to buy Child's Play gifts from their Child's Play store.
That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, that second that motion, I will just do that.
So, alrighty. I hope you guys had as much fun listening to this as we have recording it, this edition, and probably the first last edition of Chris Hussey, Naughty or Nice.
Well, it all depends if the threshold for my frustration with you reaches a certain point again and they start pitching the back room.
You want to do a really, really short game next time? Do, instead of Naughty or Nice Chris edition, do everybody has to agree with Chad edition.
You're asking see, for the impossible.
I see two ways to one up.
I'm busy that week.
You could either have Pat do this because he gets a lot of shit on here too, or even worse, that we can't make fun of any of each other. Because this would have been a lot harder if I couldn't have directed stuff at Pat and
Chad.
Out
the first 5 minutes. Yeah. The other thing I'll just be like,
look, I can't.
I'll get right back under my bus.
That would last to banter topic.
You don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Well, I know Chris gets that saying.
I get that saying.
Because Chris is old.
So, we can't use Chad as a target for these because that's like betting on a horse that's already run. But we may do this again, but I think something else we need for the next one is Drunk John.
Well, see, John probably would have swept the whole thing because, I mean, he's a trained lawyer. He could, like, totally legalese around the
threshold.
No, he does have a pretty low
BS threshold. So anyway, enough on that. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a wonderful holiday and a wonderful new year. And we will catch you all next time.
I love you, Chris.
Illogical bastard.
You guys suck.